Buenas.
Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers for Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we'll be talking about Disney Channel original movies. And our moderator for this episode will be me, Josie. So let's get into it. Now, here on the podcast, we are all 90s babies.
The last good generation, born in the last good decade.
So we were the cool kids on the block.
I mean, we still are. We still are. Like, we're still cool and hip, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of our repressed memories are probably shining light of a television screen and a bunch of kids jumping up and down in a cosmic space and the Disney Channel original movies logo popping up on screen. Hey. So...
you know that it was going to be a good movie when that hit up.
Exactly. You knew that you were in for a fun night. Honestly. And I don't know, a lot of the good premieres happened around my birthday. So I have a lot of fond memories when it comes to Disney Channel original movies.
And lucky you.
Just to give a bit of background as to Disney, what are Disney Channel original movies? I'm going to be quoting Wikipedia, a credible source. Many television films have been produced for the United States cable network Disney Channel since the service's inception in 1983. In its early years, such movies were referred to as Disney Channel premiere films. But it wasn't until 1997 onward, these television films were branded under Disney Channel original movies. And that's how the DCOMs came into being. Again, DCOMs are also 90s babies. So now you know.
Well, no wonder us 90s babies are filled with two things. SpongeBob references and DCOM references. They made up what we are. They are in our DNA. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. So there's not really much more to say other than, again, these were films that premiered exclusively on the channel, and a lot of them you can find on the Disney Plus streaming service. But let's get into it in terms of what we're going to be talking about. So again, we are those 90s babies. We are those cool kids on the block. So we are going to be highlighting some of the films that might have gone under the radar. Some of the films that you might not know about. While we do love the occasional Cheetah Girls binge, we recognize High School Musical as peak DCOM culture.
High School Musical is cinema. Poetic yes. Cinema. Like, it is said that Christopher Nolan copied Scream from High School Musical 3 senior year for Inception.
Oh, wow.
Moving on.
So, again, while we recognize High School Musical as peak DCOM culture and would agree that the Proud Family movie could make any summer worthwhile, yes. We will not be diving in to those because, of course, they're already well known. I mean, High School Musical now has High School Musical, the series. So these are the ones that have lived on and have been talked about through the generations. But we're going to be getting into the ones that most of us can talk about and sometimes people won't understand. And we have to unearth the cryptic pictures and the weird styles and in general, just ones that people are like, was that actually a movie that got made? And we're like, yes. And it was peak cinema. Thank you very much.
So yes.
Yes. And yeah. I feel that when it comes to like these type of movies, there's always there's a stereotype when you're making this kind of movie. There's like, you know, a recipe. Because each of these
absolutely
movies, they have like when I did my rewatch, they all have a similar thing, which it was a kid that he was or in middle school or in high school, and it was a coming of age story. And some of them can go like, oh, my parents don't believe in me or they don't like, you know, root for me and what I want, or they're musicals. It's one way or another.
Yeah, and they actually used to be a lot deeper and we've lost that as these years have gone by. I don't know why. I guess people were like, this is too deep for children. It's like, again, it's the whole conversation that kids actually understand a lot more than you give them credit for.
Yeah, because they sometimes tend to go to really deep themes that I was, when I did my rewatch, I was like, okay, this is, it's un poquito fuerte, but okay, moving on.
I mean, yeah, they used to hit different, not gonna lie. And the last few ones that they have been made haven't been as good as they used to be. I think they're, maybe it's just us that we grew up and we don't have, you know, the same childish mind that we had. Maybe our inner child died.
Well,
speak for yourself.
Speak for yourself. That never dies.
I mean, I haven't seen a good decom movie in a while.
You're right, and I'd like
to bring you up.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
No, it's not you, because I saw that they remade Freaky Friday into a DCOM, and I hadn't been so offended in such a long time.
You know which one offended me? The Kim Possible movie really offended me for some reason.
I remember that when...
My next one. That was offensive on every level.
Okay, but going back to you guys saying that you don't remember like a good Disney movie that had came out recently, a lot of people were hyping up Disney's Descendants when it came out.
Yeah, but just because it had hype doesn't mean it was good.
Also, I mean, yeah, it was choreographed by Kenny Ortega.
Kenny Ortega has rights.
Yeah, but there's actually like a big fan base to it.
I mean, they did make three movies. That's probably the closest thing they've had to a hit.
I mean, Zombies 3 is coming too, so.
I've never heard of her.
Oh, don't.
That's wild. I don't plan to.
But again, I think they've lost that sabor. Yeah, as we like to say here, they just used to hit different, and we say that because, again, as you'll see with some of the films we're going to discuss, they dive into, they're just very genuine and nuanced, and it also fits a lot the 1990s vibes that were in that time, because again, the 1990s weren't easy, there was a lot going on, and it kind of reflects the times that we're going through now. And it was probably difficult for them to make films that were fun, but also touched hard subjects. And that's the epitome of a good Disney Channel original film from our time. Because again, they weren't superficial.
Yeah, they definitely weren't. And that's exactly what the word I was looking for. The current DCOMs feel very superficial. That's the best way. Thank you for that word. That's the best way to describe them. Like, at least in my opinion, they don't feel the same way that they used to.
Yeah, my favorite analogy is the sugary cereal analogy. Sure, maybe what we have now, maybe Descendants is a good box of Fruit Loops, but you're not getting anything out of it. It tastes good, but what? No substance. No. And it's okay if you like Descendants. I read the books before they were adapted. It's fun. But again, just listen to what we're going to talk about and you'll understand, because Disney doesn't do it like they used to do it before. No. So we're going to jump in immediately with Juan, who has picked 3 DCOM films. Again, each of us have picked 3 Disney Channel original movies that we think you should dive into. And why? Why should we dive into those? Juan, start us off.
Okay, so I picked 3 films that I remember from DCOM that weren't huge hits, but we're still iconic. And the first one is Xenon Girl of the 21st Century.
Art.
Which is a trilogy on Disney
Cinema.
Plus.
Cinema.
Yes. So for those of you who don't know, it's about an inquisitive teenager who pries into suspected dodgy dealings on her space station home and ends up being sent down to Earth. So this series was everything. If you're a Disney kid, it's a lot of fun. It's one of the first, I feel, cool space films that were made for younger audiences. You know, and I know Gabriela loves Star Trek, but like Star Trek doesn't hit for some people like Xenon does.
Hey.
I said what I said. And Raven Simone was in here. And Xenon and Nebula's friendship, you have to stand. You have to. And in the Xenon films, there's a song, which I hope I don't get demonetized for, but it bears singing. Zoom, zoom, zoom. makes my heart go boom, boom, boom. My supernova girl.
Yes.
That song still hits today.
Yes. Where Hot Girl Summer will consist of that song.
Honestly. But yeah, the fashion was cool. The story was cool. It was always a fun time, and you could always like tune out for a bit and just have fun, which is what I love about those films, that you get to have fun. And you're like, ooh, space. And what I like about these films is also it could inspire little girls to go into, say, work for NASA because they want to go to space. Exactly, STEM research. Thank you. And, you know, we had a film now like Hidden Figures explore that. But a film like Xenon kind of like plants the seeds of like, maybe I could do that too. Like, sure, this is a little more fantasy, but it's still a possibility to go into space. So it kind of like has those undertones, which are really great.
I just don't understand why this is rated 2.8 on Letterboxd.
Because people don't have taste, Josie. I mean,
if you go look at all the DCOMs, they all have such low ratings in Letterboxd. And I'm just like, did y'all even have a childhood?
Honestly, what I do remember about this movie wasn't the story, but it was much rather the production design and the costume design of Xenon.
Yeah. Like, it's very memorable. Also, I love that the first film is in 2049, and that's only 29 years away, y'all. We could be living in 2049,
set on the same year as Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, so you can pick Gabriela's pessimistic Blade Runner 2049, or you can pick the optimistic Xenon Girl of the 21st Century. Take your pick.
That was a personal attack, wasn't it?
I wouldn't know.
Okay.
So, yeah, great trilogy on Disney Plus. Highly recommend. Lots of fun. And with these DCOMs, you can't expect, like, oh, this is going to be best picture material. No, you're just there to have fun. Have your childlike mentality. If you don't have one, don't ruin it for other people. It's not that hard.
I'm looking at some of the reviews that I would like to highlight. And one of them is, I heard that this is the main inspiration for Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey.
I'm surprised I didn't write that, because that's correct.
And someone said, comprehensive list of people who have used ice tips for good. Guy Fieri and Protozoa.
Yes.
Stanley took some notes with this movie.
And this doesn't get the recognition it deserves.
But yeah, I definitely need to give it a rewatch, but this was one of my most cherished films when I was younger. And I wish I could remember more of it, but I just remember how it made me feel. And each time there was a new installation, like, there again, there are three films, and I was just always so happy. I remember Xenon Z3 hitting different.
I love the titles too. Xenon Girl of the 21st Century, the first film, the sequel, Xenon the Z-quel, great marketing, and Xenon Z3. Like, the titles were very creative.
Like, the films are camp, I will admit to that, but they don't take themselves too seriously. It just feels like they were having fun with it. And maybe I could be wrong. Again, I wasn't there, but at least that's my perception of it.
So I'm going to move on to the second film. Yes, what's your film. Next pick? My next pick is, if you're a fan of the Hilary Duff agenda, then you will recognize a film called Cadet Kelly. Yes. Oh
my God.
The Hilary Duff agenda started when very young, and we're good with that. So for those of you who don't know, it's about a fashion-conscious youngster who is horrified when she is forced to move to military school. That is still a problem people face today. Some don't want to go to military school.
Hey, that movie hit different as a military school kid.
I'm resting my case.
It hit different. Like, I was Cadet Kelly in military school. So that movie felt like an autobiography.
It was a warning for you. Don't go and you went anyways.
Every day. And drill competitions aren't that fun. Like, that movie made them seem fun. They're not fun.
I was going to say, they don't look fun.
They are not fun.
But then I saw Hilary Duff doing that and I'm like, you go, girl.
You can't do that. You will be disqualified. So that movie lied. You can't do that.
It did lie, but at a cost.
So what do you think about the movie, Juan?
I mean, it's great. It has, you know, the iconic battle between Lizzie McGuire and Kim Possible, because her opponent is Christy Carlson Romano, who is the voice of Kim Possible. So it was kind of like a live action versus. And, you know, Christy Carlson Romano was more like the by the book, tough as nails, like officer that was supposed to like break her spirit. But Hilary Duff just kept fighting, and it was an uphill battle technically. But in the end, they ended up seeing like some similarities, which is nice. Because at first, you know, they try to pit them against each other, but then they ended up coming together for a common good, which is like a recurring theme in the DCOM films. And it's been a while since I watched it, but it was a good movie. It was really good.
Honestly, how, okay, going back to the drill scene, it made it seem fun. Being a child, you trying to recreate the drill scene and then taking like un palo de escoba o algo y tratando de hacerlo como like the fake gun.
I remember when I did drill, I dropped the gun so many times that I was forbidden from ever touching the gun again.
Oh my god.
Good times. No, actually, there were not, but.
One can dream.
No, they were never fun because as someone who is very clumsy and has poor feet coordination, I was not very good at drill either. So it was boring and I was not very good. So it was. And I was also very irritating because I didn't like it, but I was still forced to do it. Military school problems.
I just wanted to say that, you know, this film is secretly queer. I feel it. I feel it in my bones. Yeah.
Yes.
That the undertones are there between Kim Possible and Lizzie McGuire.
Hell yeah. Disney's power couple.
Honestly. I mean, Lizzie goes to military school. That's it. This is the movie. So yeah, we're going to move on to my third pick. Another agenda being involved, the Lindsay Lohan agenda, called Get a Clue. I can't be the only one who's seen this.
I have no idea. I've never seen that one.
The Brenda Song agenda, too.
The Brenda Song agenda. We never forget the Brenda Song agenda. So Get a Clue is about a wealthy student with too much fashion sense. Her equally rich friends and her rival superior from the school paper work together to solve the case when their teacher goes missing. Okay, so right off the bat, I love how this is secretly a murder mystery, kind of. Like, it's one of the few, like, actual mysteries that the DCOMs produced in terms of, like, Hallmark got inspiration from this movie to make its murder mysteries. I'm sorry. It's a short film, but it's fast-paced and it's fun. Like, yeah, it's probably obvious for you once you rewatch it, but it's fun. You don't really think. The problem is you can't think about these kind of films. You just have to go with it. And you see actors grow up in front of you, like Lindsay Lohan, Brenda Song, Hilary Duff, etc. And in this film, you see, like, yeah, they're always good actors. Sometimes the material is not great, but they're always good actors. And it's like a modern day version of Nancy Drew.
Yeah.
And this could have been a great TV series, though.
Yeah, I also love how they were both the same year.
Yeah, they were the same year, 2002. 2002, hitting different yet again. It's like Murder, She Wrote, but with Clueless, but like for kids. And it works. But it's like a full circle moment too, because you had Cadet Kelly, Get a Clue. Then you see Lizzie McGuire, Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, Kim Possible. Like, it all works.
Yeah. Also, this one, it's directed by a woman and it's 83 minutes, which is nice and concise for a mystery film.
Yeah. Maggie Greenwald, director. Love that she got that opportunity. Some of the DCOMs are directed by men. And, you know, we're getting past that. We're getting past that hurdle. But I love that. I didn't even know that till now. So, yeah. Overall, Get a Clue. Also great.
Yeah, it's also just one of those films that if you want to study Y2K fashion, this is it.
Yeah, this is very Y2K fashion. This, Cadet Kelly in a sense, and then a film that's not exactly a DCOM, but also stars Lindsay Lohan, Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen. That's like Y2K fashion in a nutshell, which for guys, it's kind of still seen the same way today.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the poster and, like, the images, one of the friends is pulling off that Neo Matrix look.
Yeah.
Which was all the rage back then.
Honestly.
Gabriela's agenda.
Yeah, I mean, look at a Cinderella story where literally, like, during the dance sequence, that one guy that is on Big Bang Theory is dressed as Neo, too.
Yeah,
that was what everyone did.
Also,
we should bring that back when the new movie releases, just saying.
Also, you know who else is in this movie? Mr. Sheffield from The Nanny.
Really?
He's in this.
He used to be in a lot of Disney Channel original movies.
He was. But also, there's a shot in Get a Clue where they all have the Matrix look, and I'm here like this. I have a feeling Gabriela's going to want to recreate this.
Probably.
Like, not calling you out, but I'm calling you out. Like, I see it coming. And yeah, there are some great little nods here that you look back and you go, oh, remember when? So yeah, definitely great films. Definitely worth checking out. They're fun. They're like less than 2 hours. I think the longest one is Cadet Kelly, but at 100 minutes. So that's still doable. And I think they're all on Disney Plus, so even better. And if you want to go down a trip, down a nostalgia-filled trip, these are great films to go with, but so are the other ones.
Thank you, Juan. Now we're going to look at Ana Sofia's picks.
So for my picks, I rewatched them all. All of them are available on the Disney Plus for streaming. And the first movie I'm going to talk about, it's called Johnny Tsunami. I don't know if you guys have seen it or remember
it. It was an unlocked memory when you said Johnny Tsunami.
And Johnny Capahala back on board.
Yes. With Moises Arias. No, not Moises Arias. Sorry. Jake T. Austin. Wow, good throwback. But yeah, usually when you mention DComs, Johnny Tsunami pops up.
Yeah, here's the thing. I didn't remember Johnny Tsunami until I was like browsing it and I saw the poster and I was like, memories unlocked. So for those that don't know, it's about a Hawaiian teenager surfer that shows off his skills when he takes the snow slopes in Burma. So basically, Johnny Capahala moves out of Hawaii because his dad got a new job in Vermont. And the place is it's full of snow and all they do is snowboard. So the thing is, he goes to an elite school, but immediately when he goes to a school full of rich people, they start to bully him because he is from Hawaii. And you're, excuse me? And the thing
damn
is
damn these colonizers.
Yeah, because here's the thing. I wasn't expecting this. And it goes back to what we said in the first couple of minutes on the episode, how some DComs have certain themes, and this had a theme that was like, okay, hold up. So the child basically was bullied because he was from Hawaii and he wasn't rich because the people around him were rich. And the thing is that he was hanging out with kids that they were from public school and they called them the urchins. I was like, excuse me? So it goes into themes of segregation in class because the rich kids were like, no, I don't want to hang out with you guys just because, first of all, you're from Hawaii and you're hanging out with kids that are from public school. I thought it was pretty interesting because this movie is from 99. And I like how Disney in those times, they were like a little bit bold enough to enter these type of things and have these type of conversations for a kids movie.
I will say that in 2012, Complex ranked the film at number 2 on the magazine's list of the 25 best Disney Channel original movies.
Damn.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to put it on my rewatch list then.
Also, this film explored, when it comes to like the private school settings, that during that time, during the 2000s, that was still a very prevalent thing if you weren't from a certain class, certain city.
Yeah, I think the 90s and the early 2000s really liked to explore the fish out of water concept.
And for some, it was very much something they could identify with, that they see Johnny Capahala and they're like, Yeah, that's currently what I'm going through because kids at schools pick on me because I'm not a part of this social class. So that film, I feel, was ahead of its time, but also very necessary.
Not only what Juan said about social classes, but they also talked about ethnicity in a certain point, because the main character and his family, they're like from Hawaii, and the other colored person was his best friend and his dad, and they were surrounded by white people. And in the film, they put the white people as the rich people, the snobby people. So I don't know. I also found that interesting as a commentary. Okay, so my next pick. This is a vivid dream, because the only thing that I remember from this movie, it was a child that he garnished a chicken with Fruit Loop cereal. Okay?
Yes.
So I had to hit in the film poster chat. Hey guys, do you remember this scene? So the movie is called Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off. So it's about a kid named Eddie, and he is in the baseball team. But the thing is that he also loves cooking, but his friends, they don't want him to cook, nor his dad. His dad is also the coach of the baseball team. And I gotta say, when I was rewatching this movie, this movie was kind of sexist.
Yeah, because I haven't watched it in a while, but I think the movie was at least trying to criticize gender roles.
It was, but it was so blatantly there that it was really obvious, and it came off as like not a message, but rather it was really annoying.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it came off dated.
Yeah, because like every time, like if Eddie was in his hallway, like in the school hallway, people would just laugh at him and call him names because all he ever wanted was to cook. Why are you making fun of him just because he wants to cook? And his dad was extremely sexist because first of all, he didn't want his child to cook. And then because he's the coach of the baseball team, there were some girls in the baseball team, or they were like, oh, you should hit like a boy or run like a boy. I'm like, excuse me? Can you, like, calm down for a moment?
Yeah, I think the film handles a lot of machismo topics because, again, during the time, early 2000s, 1990s, that was the attitude that was used when raising boys, that you had to be a jock, you had to be good at least a sport. And in this case, the father was manager of the baseball team, so of course, he put a lot of pressure on the guys, but he put more pressure on the girls because if they wanted to be there, they had to deliver just as well as the guys. Fun fact, something still seen in WWE, just saying. Pero, also, this film, you can see a parallel to High School Musical.
Yay!
That is kind of like the prequel in the sense of Troy wants to do basketball, wants to sing. Eddie wants to learn how to cook, even though he put cereal on his stuff, and play baseball to please everyone. And it's that choice of, I want to do this, but no one accepts me if I do this. Yeah. And it kind of speaks to them, to the boys who feel different, quote unquote.
I totally agree. But the thing is, I feel, just when I watch it, it feels a little bit outdated, you know? And you can handle this type of theme, but I just felt that by watching this, it wasn't handled well enough, okay? And then we have another side story where the girl, like one of his friends, her mom wanted her to be a cheerleader, but she just wanted to play baseball. And I kind of liked how when we have the closing of her character development, that the mom goes to her and sees her play baseball, she was like, you know what? Okay, fine, you can play. And then we see the dad, seeing how the mom was so supportive, and he came to realize that, you know what, I'm going to drop this out. I'm going to drop this game and go to help my son. And I liked it. I liked that by the end, he was like, you know what, I don't care that you cook, that is your passion. I'm here to help you. Like, I'm here to support you. And another thing that I like is, you know, that most of DCOM movies, they tend to have like a happy ending that, oh, the main character gets what he wants. He doesn't get what he wants because he enters a scholarship, like a cook-off where he can win a scholarship, and he doesn't win it. But he feels happy that he finally gets to cook.
They probably heard about what he did with the Fruit Loops, and they're like, are we sure we want to give him the scholarship? Like, creative, but also taste-wise, yikes.
Eso de los Fruit Loops me voló la cabeza, okay? When I was a child.
I used to think of it, I always wanted to try it out of curiosity.
Same. It gave me like the same concept of chicken and waffles.
There's a YouTube channel that recreates like iconic foods from.
Yeah.
So I think they did it once. I'm not sure. But speaking as someone who doesn't know how to cook, even I know that putting Fruit Loops in chicken is wrong.
Same. I wouldn't go to that cook.
I will say that the poster of this movie is actually pretty creative.
It is. It's pretty creative.
You know that the graphic designer was like, ah, oh, yes.
And the thing is, like, when it comes to also DCOM movies, you know, there's a pattern here. Because I checked the actor that played the main character. It's called Taylor Ball. And when you, like, hit on his letterbox, he doesn't do anything else. And with the next film that I'm going to talk about, that Gabriela can jump on this one. So it's called The 13 Years. And it's about a teen that learned that his birth mother is a mermaid after he begins to grow fins and slimy scales on his 13th birthday. So when I also go to the letterbox of this child, he doesn't do anything else. So I feel that it's a pattern when it comes to actors in DCOM movies.
Yeah, that movie was my shit. Like, that movie was my jam. I was obsessed with that film.
I feel it's because when we were kids, we always have this kind of imagination that you're a mermaid when you're in the pool or at the beach.
Yes. Fully blame that. Also, the old Nickelodeon show, H2O, that show also played a huge part in my obsession.
That was my jam. I was obsessed.
Yeah, so my obsession was H2O and the 13th year. Also, the Little Mermaid TV show that used to air on Disney.
Every morning.
Every morning. It just hit different, you know, bless.
Don't forget about the movie Aquamarine.
Oh, wow. My God, yes.
The I Holy Trinity. Memory.
Amen.
Yeah, but mermaids were very prevalent during the early 2000s, before Percy Jackson tried to be like, I'm son of Poseidon. It's like, no. Like Anna's going to discuss, 13 year was like, mermaid and merman can happen.
Yeah, because when you see films that portray mermaids, it's mostly a female, but oh, you look at this and he's a man, he's a guy. So it was kind of interesting that the gender roles were reversed here. And I don't know, it's just this movie kind of feed the fantasy that when I was a child, they get like, oh, being a mermaid in the pool, you know?
I remember that one of my friends in school, he was a competitive swimmer. And I remember very distinctly asking him one day, because I had rewatched this film, if he was growing scales after getting out of the pool, because he was also a competitive swimmer, like the guy from the movie. And he just looked at me and said, my mother is not a mermaid. You're well, fuck you too.
Honestly, I would have loved that, to have been a competitive swimmer and get scales. And it's like, yeah, you're a mermaid. It's like, great. I love the water. I don't have to deal with the problems on Earth later on.
No, but like, this movie is it's like the weird side of DCOM movies. Because this movie was pretty weird, not gonna lie, okay? It was a weird coming-of-age story.
Entertainment Weekly called the film a heartwarming and somewhat creepy tale of growing up, leaving the nest, and of course, being yourself.
Coraline took notes.
Literalmente.
Yeah, I just want to point out, when I was watching this movie, in my notes, I wrote, who swims with his shoes on? He should be in jail.
Wait. Okay.
What?
So I know there are like these slippers.
Because it was this moment that he needed to go to his like swimming competition. And he lost the ride. So he was like, you know what? I'm going to swim there. So he basically, he didn't take his shoes on or anything. He just swam with his shoes on. I was like, excuse me, that's very uncomfortable. But that is a crime. So I checked him out. And he actually still does interviews because people still talk about this movie.
I mean, it's a childhood staple for most.
It is. It is. You know what? It's kind of great that he embraces that part of his childhood, and he still talks about it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those films that I wrote down because I looked at the list of all the Disney Channel original movies, and I only wrote down the ones that immediately I was like, yes, I remember this one fondly. And even if it was good or bad, I don't care. It's just one of those films that I saw and it just left an impression on me. And of course, it was like everything you've just said. It was different. It dealt with being a mermaid, but usually like we see with women. And it was very interesting to see it with a guy. And just, it also deals with growing up and puberty in a very nuanced way.
It slaps, not gonna lie. It slaps.
Me encanta.
And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast.
Okay, Gabriela, what are your picks?
Okay, so since Anna already talked about the 13th year, I have one that was kind of like my introduction to something else. And that is The Phantom of the Megaplex.
Of course.
Wait, what is that?
So Phantom of the Megaplex is basically Phantom of the Opera, but not a musical. And it's basically about a phantom in a movie theater.
Okay.
So yes, it is basically the plot of Phantom of the Opera minus the music and the romance and all of that. It's just, you know, that there's a phantom in a movie theater and these kids want to find out if it's true and who it is. Let me tell you something.
Yeah, because it's based on the novel.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, obviously, but it's so great. I watched it so many times. And not gonna lie, when I was a child, the reveal of who the phantom was had me shook. But nowadays, it's kind of like, it was very obvious, but...
Yeah, I was waiting for someone to pick this one.
But yeah, fans, I have so many memories. And me and my brother would watch it so many times because they would play it a lot around Halloween. And also early in the morning while we were getting ready for school. It was one of those films that they would constantly play. So it's very dear to my heart. And it's a lot of fun. And after that is when I discovered Phantom of the Opera. So... thank you, Phantom of the Megaplex, for introducing me to one of the loves of my life, Phantom of the Opera. Have any of the posters seen it, or is Josie the only one?
I have seen it. I just don't remember. I really need to. This is a perfect episode because now I know what to rewatch.
I saw it. I don't remember it. Like, I saw it yeah. When I was younger.
I wish I could remember the twist so I could comment on it, but...
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that if I watch it now, I'm not going to be as astounded as if I were watching it when I was younger.
Yeah, I remember the creepy white mask. That's it. That it looked very...
iconic.
It looked so creepy. It was like this white mask that... yeah, I can see the Phantom of the Opera like similarities now. But if I see that mask in a movie theater, I'm running from the killer.
This is the first time I've heard about it, but I checked the poster and... I like it.
Anna, you would like it. You would love it.
Well, reading the reviews on Letterboxd, hey. Andrew Lloyd Webber wishes.
That's so
A lot of people seem to like it.
It is a classic.
And it still has a 2.7 rating, which is kind of... these poor DCOMs, people rate them well, but then they're like, no.
People, stop ruining Letterboxd reviews for these movies. They're fun.
If you see me 5-starring Phantom of the Megaplex, don't judge.
In fact, encourage.
What's your next pick?
My next pick is a film that kind of also started my love for rom-coms, and that is My Date with the President's Daughter.
Every time you say the title, I hear the jingle in my head.
I hear the song.
Oh, I just remember, because I've always been kind of like a nerd, a history nerd. And when, you know, the main characters meet and they agree for the date, he asks for her address and she tells him the address of the White House. And she tells him, oh, it's the big White House. You're not going to miss it. I just, every time I lose it at that scene, because when she says, like, it's the big White House, like, it's literally the White House. And the thing is that the guy never suspects anything until he's like getting out of his car in front of the White House. And I'm just like, how did you not know that she meant like the actual White House and not like a White House?
I mean, leave my boy, I understand.
Wilfredo alone.
Yeah, also the fact that Wilfredo is in this film.
Boy Meets World icon. Love him.
Can we talk about her iconic pink dress?
Yes. Another staple of
Y2K
fashion.
I always wanted that dress. But this movie is just so cute and so wholesome. And after that film, I watched iconic films like First Daughter and Chasing Liberty, which all deal with the same thing, that it's a guy that starts dating the president's daughter. So this is kind of like an unofficial trilogy between My Date with the President's Daughter, First Daughter, and Chasing Liberty.
Yeah, this one actually reminds me of Starstruck, which is one of my absolute favorite Disney Channel original movies, and it's at the top of everything, but I will not be talking about it in my picks because, of course, people know Starstruck. I mean, it came out in the 2010s. So
now, remember when we rewatched it recently?
Oh, wow.
Hilarious.
It still holds up, but it has the same vibes as this one because there's like someone trying to get someone for a dance, and of course the date ends up being someone larger than life, quote unquote. And
not to confuse Starstruck with the 303 featuring Katy Perry hit, also from the early from the 2000s.
Oh, Starstruck. Also the Lady Gaga Starstruck hit.
The trilogy we didn't know we needed.
But yeah, this film just has a good formula, as Anna was commenting, because a lot of these do follow the same formula, and I think this was my favorite one.
Yes, I love this film so much. It's just, you know, a good wholesome time, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And Wilfredo.
Yes.
I will support him.
I don't remember this movie, but I just remember that the title is really iconic.
Yeah, especially the poster, this, like, she's 5 minutes late, alert the National Guard.
That scene kills me every time, because that's how I imagined parents calling their kids.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because looking back at how people actually wanted to make these types of films that have to do with the presidency, and that has clearly gone away, and I'm kind of glad it has. It had its time. Let's move past it.
I mean, they're not gonna be the same after.
Definitely not.
So I think it's good that this genre has been put to rest.
Yeah, it had its time. Also, I mean, obviously, when you look back, even though Disney Channel original movies did try to be a little diverse, I mean, Disney Channel was a lot more diverse before than it was now. And I think it's trying to do better, but there was that weird period where it was just not. And just looking at this film, I'm like, ah, yes. White people falling in love.
Okay, so my final pick. I know Josie said we were not going to talk about any popular film, but I just can't go without mentioning this DCOM, because it truly changed my life. And that is Twitches.
Which, side note, we have spoken about it before on the Halloween episode, so we don't cover anything here. Hey, check that episode out so you can get even more Twitches fun.
I love Twitches. It was just a lot of fun. And, you know, as someone who always loved fantasy and magic, you know, seeing this film about two sisters that find out that they have magical powers, I wished it was me. I wanted to someday find out that I also had magical powers and that I could travel to another land and practice my magic. But sadly, it hasn't happened yet. I'm still cross my fingers.
Also, Tien Tamara Mowry were just one of my favorites growing up. And also, one thing I wanted to note is the fact that this was one of the first times that we saw people kind of aged up, because it was their 21st birthday. Usually it's like a 16th or a 15th or maybe even an 18th, but not a 21st.
Yeah, definitely. And also, one thing that I found out when I was rewatching it recently is that Joyce from Schitt's Creek is in the first film. And then they recasted her in the second film.
How rude. Jennifer Robertson deserves better.
I know. It was rude. And it was kind of like also how, because, you know, normally as a child, I would associate witches with dark magic and being evil. And this was kind of like the first time that I saw a witches that were good and that they used their powers for good.
Yeah, the Twitches and Halloween Town double feature is upon us.
Yes. But yeah, I love Twitches. I can't go talking about DCOMs without Twitches, because I love those films so much, and they still hit the same way that they hit when I saw it the first time so many years ago.
Also, the fact that it did deal with class struggles within this fantastical setting.
Exactly. Like, they don't hit that way anymore. We don't see that anymore in DCOMs.
And I still feel upset that we haven't gotten a third one. And there is a rumor that they want to do a third one with Chloe and Hallie. And all I'm saying is, Disney, you already robbed me of a Lizzie McGuire reboot that I deserved. Don't fail me with Twitches 3. That's all I'm going to say.
They also, there was also a post-credit scene in the second Twitches film that paved the way for a third film. And we just never got it. And yes, I'm mad. Also, Anna, emergency Twitches watch as soon as we finish recording.
Oh my God.
Marvel took notes on post-credit scenes thanks to Twitches.
Facts.
And that is on period.
So, Josie, what are your picks? What are your DCOM childhood picks?
Okay, so I have so many films that have stayed with me and formed part of my personality in such a way and just live in the deepest parts of my mind. And like those repressed memories that we've been talking about, these stay there. And I welcome them whenever they want to come out. And the first one I'm going to be talking about is Wendy Wu, Homecoming Warrior. A classic.
Cinema. Poetic art. Cinema.
Art.
Belongs in the Criterion Collection. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Honestly, yes. Brenda Song, iconic.
Yes.
She was where in so many is films.
Her Oscar for this movie?
We love her.
I demand to know.
Yeah, so it's a 2006 Disney Channel original movie starring Brenda Song and Shinko Yamada. And the voice of Hadley Hudson is also featured. Koyamada plays a Chinese monk who visits the title character, and Wendy is an American teenager played by Song, claimed to be the reincarnation of a powerful female warrior. She's also the only person who can prevent the spirit of an ancient and evil Chinese dragon named Yanlo, voiced by Hudson, from destroying the world. And I think my favorite part of this film was because I was very into soccer. I was on the soccer team, so that part already had me sold. And this film had more than 5.7 million viewers on the night of its premiere, and I can attest to it. It's iconic. Everyone loved it. Everyone was talking about it during its time.
Back in my day, they used to release these on DVD. And
I have the DVD.
I also have the DVD.
Yeah, it's actually the fifth highest viewed DCOM at the time.
Good for her.
Yeah, it also broke records in the United Kingdom and Europe, making Disney Channel the highest rated kids channel in Europe. Its impact.
Wow. Her power. I also remember having a crush on that monk.
Everyone did. I will say that it has... Oh, yeah. Tsumba.
Oh, I was going to say that this film was supposed to get a sequel. And in an alternate ending on their DVD, Ian Lo was revealed to be possessing the Wu family dog, which was unknown to everyone else. And the sequel was cut from the schedule, and they canceled it. Wow. We were robbed. This could have been another hit.
As per its reception, some people did comment that the film does rely on stereotypes, but that Song also shown as the title character, and that's what most people can agree on. that they consider her character to be a strong protagonist and a good role model for people. And even Brenda Song herself described how she identified with the character, struggling to keep her heritage, which I think is something that probably struck a chord with a lot of people, especially when you have a specific culture and a specific heritage, but you live in the United States and you're trying to relate with the people there, but you're also trying to keep your roots, and just that balance and that struggle.
Need to rewatch ASAP.
That film is so good. You know, the action scenes were so great as well.
And the scene on the soccer field where she was defending, like making sure none of them get into the goal, like that was amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
The fighting choreography.
Yes. And just the fact that it just has very good character development.
Yes.
Also, the final fight that the spirit ends up possessing the popular girl.
Yes.
That she's fighting with. And it's like, I just know she went to therapy fighting her, because she's like, I'm going to view this as the person I don't get along with and not an evil entity, because she deserves it.
And I guess the final thing I would like to share is that this movie also won the Best Asian American Cast Ensemble at the San Francisco International Asian American Film Festival back in 2006. So its impact. Disney Channel original movies have rights sometimes.
Sometimes?
Sometimes.
I mean, we already talked about the critical reception for 13th Year. Even though it is regarded as one of the best Disney Channel original movies, it does
have. It is choice. One of the best. Don't listen to the critics who have no joy. Listen to us who grew up with those films and would five-star the 13th Year without thinking twice.
People absolutely should not take these films seriously.
Don't listen to the people on Letterboxd trying to ruin a good time. You're missing out if you do this.
If I wanted to watch a cinematic masterpiece, I would just rewatch Inception.
But why watch Inception when you can watch Wendy Wu Homecoming Warrior,
exactly.
Which is also shorter and exactly. More entertaining and left Nolan quaking early on in his career?
Hey, so my next flick is another Brenda Song feature, because I loved her. I loved anything that had Brenda Song when I was growing up. And this one is Stuck in the Suburbs from 2004. So this film, Brittany Ahrens is one of the many girls who has a crush on popular singer and boy toy Jordan Gale. However, she is bored of living a suburban existence and seeks a little something more. First World Problems, the movie. But we like to see it. Again, this one has Daniel Panabaker, who is also a Disney darling, and Brenda Song. So you have two Disney darlings in one film. What else can you ask for? Also, you have Taron Killam, who is known for his time on SNL.
That's right. Wait, he's in this. Oh my God, wait.
Right. You're just unlocking memories. Well, no, because I loved it. I used to love that film. But just the cast, other than Brenda Song and Daniel Panabaker, I have a hard time remembering them.
Yeah. You keep unlocking memories. This might as well be Charlie XCX's Unlock It.
Yeah,
this film was...
Yeah. The poster. No, because I didn't remember the movie, but I just checked a letterbox. I was like, oh, my memories were unlocked and right there.
See, and this film received 3.7 million viewers at its TV premiere, including top rankings in the time period in the kids 6 to 11 and 9 to 14 demographics. And I'm pretty sure I was one of them.
Same. But this also has a Jesse McCartney song in the soundtrack called Good Life.
The film soundtrack entered the U.S. Billboard 200 and peaked at number 5 on the Billboard Top Kid Audio charts.
That was also our doing.
I just want to say, I have good taste.
I think we all have good taste.
I think my favorite aspect of this film was Brittany and Natasha's friendship, played by, again, Daniel Panabaker and Brenda Song. Like, when I think about this film, that's what sticks with me the most, because... Again, friendship breakups are hard, and it was one of the first films that deals with that, and it did remind me of what Booksmart ended up being, but it was the Booksmart of our time. But it also dealt, again, with, like, celebrity crushes, which I think this is what built, like, this was the seed for my celebrity crushes era, because I just have a thing for films where people meet, like, famous people, and then they fall in love with, like, an ordinary girl. and that's what most of people were writing in fan fiction. So this, I'm pretty sure that this film shaped the generation.
Yeah, and I just think everyone bounced well off of each other in this film. And even though, again, these films are campy and they're cheesy, but they hit the spot.
Okay, and the final film we're going to be talking about is Pixel Perfect, which came out in 2004. And
oh my God.
So summary, Samantha's band, the Zeta Bytes, is meeting with little success.
Oh my God.
So her friend Roscoe uses his knowledge of technology designed by his father to create a holographic lead singer, Loretta Modern. Julian the Phantoms. Wow, the vibes. The band instantly becomes successful, but Samantha begins to feel alienated. Roscoe discovers feelings for Samantha, and Loretta struggles with individuality. This film was wild. This film is a wild ride, and I really need a rewatch. I really desperately need a rewatch, because I wish I could convey, like, more accurate feelings as to how I would perceive this film nowadays. But I remember loving this when I was a kid. But it also gave me an existential crisis, and I do recall that deeply.
You just unlocked this memory. But oh my God. I don't remember seeing this movie much. I think I saw it like once or twice.
I don't remember it either. I just know that the guy, the main guy, he's from Phil of the Future.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember this film, and I remember that one of the songs still slaps today.
Can we talk about how the genres for this film are comedy, drama, music, sci-fi?
Everything.
Yeah, and I love how the tagline is, they don't make rock stars like they used to. Get it? Because he makes a rock star.
Hey.
No puedo con esta película.
One of the reviews says, I love Ex Machina.
Honestly, this movie walks so Ex Machina can run.
Honestly, if you're going to take anything from this episode, is please watch these movies so then you can read the Letterboxd reviews that don't take it too seriously and have fun with it. There are some gems for these films.
We love to see it.
I will say, I think the part that has stayed with me the most, looking back, like without a rewatch, is the part where Loretta, who is the pixelated character, she finds herself in Samantha's body, and then she goes outside because she couldn't go outside. Because again, she's pixelated. She can't go outside. She only exists within the house and the space that she was made for. And she can't go outside, basically. So she wants to feel the rain, and she's in Samantha's body, but she knows she shouldn't be there, but she's just happy to finally feel the rain and be outside and touch the grass, kind of like Rapunzel. And then she gets struck by lightning!
I don't remember this.
Yes, and when she wakes up, Loretta is gone forever, because for a moment she took over Samantha's body, and then Roscoe is like, this is wrong!
Oh my God.
I don't remember anything from the film except that. And I just remember watching this film like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Because Loretta's in Sam's body. And Roscoe, now it's wrong, but he has feelings for Samantha, but also Loretta has kind of developed feelings for Roscoe, which is weird because he created her, but let's not get into it. And nothing, Loretta technically dies. Like, she disappears forever, and then they honor her in like a tribute performance.
I actually have understood that Selena Gomez wrote A Year Without Rain in dedication of Loretta.
Oh my God.
One.
Because they don't make rock stars like they used to.
No, they don't.
And then anyways, by the end, Roscoe sees Loretta's ghostly figure in the spotlight, and he comments that the Zeta Bytes have a guardian angel. This film was wild. Please, if you can watch it, please let me know what you think, because I can't believe I used to love this now that I like reread the plot and everything, but it is wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
Also, listen to Nothing's Wrong With Me from the soundtrack. It still hits.
Well, that's all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and TikTok. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we sign off?
You know, stan the original DCOMs, you know. They just hit different. They made us who we are today. Like, who would we be if we had never seen High School Musical or Twitches or even Stuck in the Suburbs? Who would we be today? Exactly. No one.
Also, again, gonna keep saying it. They might be a little campy, but most of them are really wholesome.
I mean, if we're gonna say anything, is that if you want to rewatch these DCOM films and you're studying at the moment, here's what you do. You have a Disney Plus account ready for the summer. Disney Plus still has the Disney Channel original games, the Olympic Games. So you watch those, but you also do a summer. Every Friday, you watch a set of DCOM movies. You get popcorn. Boom, you're living out your 2000s fantasy.
Or, you know, pizza. You know, what better pizza way than a Friday night, pop in a DCOM and eat pizza. That sounds like heaven.
Pizza and remember, don't take this movie seriously, honestly.
Exactly. Have fun. Do people know what fun is like anymore? Have fun.
Also, please watch Pixel Perfect. I need someone to talk to.
I'm gonna rewatch it.
I mean, it's existential crisis, the movie. Fight me. Now, where can they find you, posers?
You can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Ana_Sofia53 and on Letterboxd as Ana_Sofia.
You can find me on Twitter making jokes or going through a crisis at Leading Mohicans. And you can find me at Letterboxd at the same at Leading Mohicans, where I rate films like DCOMs and anything I feel like watching.
And you can find me at the Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd. And that's all for today's episode. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye. Bye.